The first follower is what transforms a lone nut into a leader.
It's pulling about 90% of the weight right now.
Just say it then. What are you holding back?
The procrastinator's brain also has an instant gratification monkey.
This baby hits 88 miles per hour.
Generate the 1.21.
You gotta see some serious shit.
It's gonna be the Nate Marie method, or Nate. It's gotta be the mic.
Hey man, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Good. Sorry, I was running out of a meeting, so I was a bit late, but excited for our guest today.
Yeah, so we have Lau McKenney on, who I met originally during the On Deck Writer Fellowship.
And we're in the same writing group, right?
We were, yeah. So I got to kind of see his very vulnerable pieces up close. And Lyle is just, he rolls with confidence when he writes about his life. And it's something actually I think about a lot, because I struggle a little bit with just being extra vulnerable and like, really, who wants to hear this about me? And Lyle just is such a great storyteller. And so really excited to dig into his process, his newsletter that he writes every week, and everything else that's going on with him.
How much has he changed since, like, what was it, like 6 months ago when you first met him? How much his writing has changed? Have you seen that evolution from him?
I think the writing has evolved quite a bit. He was always, he writes sort of like these mini memoirs. And in the beginning, it was just a little bit more rough, right? But it was still the same essence of what he does today that I saw back then. But really, it's just so polished. And we chat during this conversation about how tension is an important part in his writing style. And you could see it back then, but now he's so much better at just kind of hooking you in and just dragging you through the piece. Like, you don't want to stop. And so that's something I really admire about his writing style.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm really excited to have this conversation. So let's just let him in and get started.
Great.
Oh my God.
Lyle.
Hey, Lyle.
Oh my God. Okay. There we go. Sorry.
There we go.
You guys are on a different screen for some reason. I don't know why. It never happens.
Oh, strange. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Doing well.
It's great to see you, man. I know we didn't like connect very deeply during our writing group on the writing, but great to see you.
Yeah, likewise. I feel like I kind of know you because I've listened to you guys a few times on your podcast. So,
oh, we do have listeners then. Okay.
Yeah.
There are people listening to us.
There are tens of us.
Yes, exactly. No, that's a joke we can tell. You can't tell that joke.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You can say hundreds, but tens is ours.
I meant tens of thousands. Sorry.
Yes, right. I was pretty fortunate. I feel like we had one of the better writing collectives in On Deck. And just talking with other people, I feel like we had kind of a little magical group of people, which was really cool.
Yeah, totally. I was kind of like sad when it dissipated there. We had like the run-in at the holidays and it sort of just died off.
Yeah,
but it was really good there for a while. We had a good mix of people.
You were one of the most like active people during On Deck writing, from what I remember, on Slack, just giving people feedback, asking for feedback, just like a good example of you put in as much as you get out, as much as you put in, which I wanted to aspire to, but my work situation was so crazy at the time that I really couldn't spend the time or just make the time for it. But how were you able to do that? Was it just like an intention you set for you that I'm gonna like make sure I spend at least like a few hours a day on this, or was it like you were 100% focused on writing at the time?
Yeah, it was definitely intentional. I was like, I'm going to just dive in and meet a ton of people and network and really work on my writing. I was definitely fortunate to be in a job that wasn't super demanding on my time at that time. And I could kind of work whenever I wanted to. And it was just like, if the work gets done, you're good. And it wasn't like we're in like some hyper growth company or anything like that. That, you know, like an early stage startup, which I've been in those situations before, and it would have not been possible. So I feel your pain there. But yeah, it was totally just like, I'm going to just take advantage of this. The other thing is like, I've been through cohort-based courses in the past, some in person. And that was always the biggest thing for me, was people are only going to be like super active during that time. And just like I said a second ago to Nate, it was, it, it, the group that we had was really good, but after the 8 weeks was up, it fizzled out really fast, you know? So it's like, take advantage of that energy when everyone has that energy and you can meet people. And, you know, I have friends now, like I would consider Nate a friend, you know, and like a bunch of other people who not only just read my stuff, but also, you know, like we just interact on Twitter or, you know, jump on a Zoom call. Like there was a couple other writers that have just done, like we jump on Zoom for like an hour and work together, you know, which has been, that's been awesome. You know, it's been helpful, especially like in this time, like being, you know, in quarantine and stuff. And then, I mean, we're not really in that so much anymore, but I'm still working from home and don't have that like in office interaction with folks. And so it's been great to just like ping someone and go, hey, you want to do a Zoom work session at some point, you know, stuff like that. So that's been awesome.
Yeah, I love that, capturing energy early. And, you know, with our podcast, we tend to do things really backwards here. We're like, you know, let's not intro the guests ahead of time before we just start pummeling you with questions. But for those of you who don't know Lyle McKenney, you know, Lyle is an incredibly talented writer. I want you to introduce yourself, but yeah, I'd love to give you a chance to just give us a quick pitch on who you are and where you're writing.
Yeah. So I'm Lyle McKenney and I write a weekly newsletter that I hesitate to call a newsletter because it's mostly just like memoir style personal stories. And I sprinkle in a little advice column there, here and there. I call it Just Enough to Get Me in Trouble. And you can find it at lyle.substack.com, real easy. But yeah, it's a way for me to explore things that have happened in my life. I've had a lot of interesting life experiences and the writing has helped me dig into like what those mean for me and how they've changed me as a person. And then I always try to like find a way to make them sort of universally appealing in a way, or like tie into universal human emotions so that, you know, like I was in a major label band. Most people haven't done that, but I can make it maybe relatable in some way to someone who's trying to achieve something that's difficult or something like that. So that's a long-winded way of saying I write on the internet.
I love it. You know, just kind of going back, I know you've probably answered this question a lot, but one thing I keep thinking about when I think of you, it's, so you've been signed to a major record label. You've played professional poker at the main event and you write weekly and you are raising, is M 3 years old? Four? She's three? Okay. And you're raising a daughter who has cerebral palsy. And I'm wondering, like, is there, like, where is the knot in this thread of your personality? Like, what kind of carries you through all of these, this journey, these experiences that you've had? What's that commonality to you?
Yeah, I've definitely thought about this. And other people have asked me this similar things because it seems somewhat random, you know, how I've jumped from thing to thing. And mostly it's just following my interests at the time. You know, I'm one of these people where I'll bounce from thing to thing as far as like what I'm into, you know, as far as hobbies and, you know, what I'm reading or consuming, things like that. But then if I get really into something, then I tend to go deeper on it, you know, and especially if it's like an activity that I'm doing. So like poker is a good example, right? Where I was just playing it for fun on the side with some friends. And then I was like, oh, I'm getting pretty good at this. And I started taking it more serious and spending more time on it. And then all of a sudden I was making more money doing that than at my real job. And so I was like, well, let's just go for this. And so I've done that a number of times. You know, startups would be another example where I tried to start a couple different companies. And I was just kind of into the tech startup scene, if you will, at the time, and just followed my interest there. And, you know, just trying to find ways to like spend more time on the thing that I'm into at that time. Right. I think that's part of it. And then also the other thing they have in common is they're hard things to succeed at, you know, like they're very low probability of success, but if they work, you can have kind of outsized success, right? Startups are like easy example there. Poker, if you do well and you know, have a good run, you can make some serious money. And then the band, obviously, like, you know, if it had gone really well, you know, I might be a household name, or the band might be a household name, you know. And then writing, I would say somewhat similarly, right? Like I'm writing online, but I'm also writing a book, and I you know, I'm trying to go potentially go like the traditional publishing route and have a chance at having something that could become a bestseller. I know the odds are extremely not in my favor, but it's one of those where I've always said like, well, someone writes a bestseller every year, so why not me? You know, at least give it a shot, you know, and put my best effort towards it. So I think I've taken that kind of approach to a lot of things in my life.
Wow. That's actually really, I love that. Just setting the bar extremely high for yourself in some ways and kind of seeing where the chips land. So yeah, I'm kind of curious, like, where are you from originally?
Yeah. So I'm born and raised in California. So I grew up in San Jose, California, had a stint of about a decade in Santa Barbara. That was when I was in the band and stuff like that, going to school down there. Well, I promptly dropped out of school to do the band more seriously. And then I've been in the North Bay. So I live in Sonoma, California now. And I've been up in this area for probably like 13 years, something like that now. So yeah, all California my whole life.
Love it.
Before, like, without deciding to get too deep too early, but you mentioned something about trying to use the experience from, or just the learnings from all of these different experiences and apply to for other people's benefits. What are some of those like common themes that could be gained from playing poker, being in a band, raising a kid, that you think are applicable to everyone? And essentially, how the other way to look at this question is like, how do you pick those topics that would be applicable to everyone and writing about them?
Yeah, I would say one thing that immediately comes to mind is just dealing with adversity and things not going the way you expect them to go. Because, and that's part of where the name for my publication came from. I call it Just Enough to Get Me in Trouble. And it sort of has two meanings for me. The first is kind of the, I would say, colloquial, I can never say that word, meaning, which is, you know, like, I know a little bit about a lot of things, so I'm sort of a generalist in that way. But also, I feel like I've had just enough success, and that's sort of the taste of things going my way and not quite achieved them to the levels that I had hoped. And that can get you in trouble as far as, like, you know, they can haunt you if you don't have the right mental approach. The band being the most obvious example, because we signed a record deal in late 2000. I'll never forget the date because it's super easy. It's 112200. So November 22nd, 2000, we signed this record deal with DreamWorks Record. And then, you know, we do the album in a big fancy studio. We record a video that's going to be on MTV, and all this stuff is sort of like, okay, the dream is happening and there's this trajectory that's happening. And then our buddies in the band Papa Roach had their single hit radio called Last Resort, and they sold like 3 million albums in like 2 months. And we're like, yes, that's what we're going to do, right? Like, that's what you do. And we're on the same label and had a lot of the people, some of the same people working with us. But then, you know, the single hits radio and MTV2, the video's on there. And we saw it at a hotel when we're on the road. And then like 2 or 3 days later, 9/11 happened. So that obviously threw a huge monkey wrench in any promotional efforts that we had going. And, you know, it felt like the rug just got like pulled out from under us. And it's like all of those plans and hopes and dreams we had just sort of got swept away. And honestly, like, it still bothers me sometimes, you know, that it's like something that was completely out of our control. But in some ways you can take these things and warp them in your mind over time as to somehow being your fault, even though there's so many factors outside of your control. And I think some people can relate to that, maybe not such an extreme example, but just things happen, you know, and like the best laid plans don't work, right? And I think that's where it gets into kind of the universality, right? Where, you know, especially ambitious people who are trying to, you know, enact some change in the world or something like that, things don't always go as you'd think they would, you know? So that's kind of like a long-winded example, but, you know, I'll take things like that where it's like, even though my experience is very unique, there's some, like, you know, universal human things involved.
Has that come natural to you? Just the idea that you can get really vulnerable quickly? Like, have you been... When I met you at On Deck, how long had you been writing before that? And was this something that took a lot of time to sort of become comfortable talking about hard things?
When you met me I had not been writing publicly, at least that long, at least this style of writing. In the past, I've written blogs and stuff like that, but they were more like I was trying to get into the tech world at that time. And I was writing, I was like, I should have opinions on these things, you know, but and some of those, I guess I would get a little bit vulnerable or tell a story from my band and stuff like that. But honestly, I think a part of it is the birth of my daughter and like wanting to tell that story and give people a peek into that experience. And then reading other memoirs has really helped me over the last couple of years, as far as wanting to like lean into that more and be more vulnerable and finding that it really can resonate with people and audience and, you know, become something that I could do potentially for a living at some point and, you know, have a project that's creative. Cause I hadn't done something really that creative in a long time. I mean, there's always like little creative things you could do with any work you're doing, but I think, you know, really being like more creative, like I was when I was in the band, that's felt really good. And so I started that was a big motivator for getting started on it. And yeah, I would say the style of writing has come somewhat naturally to me, you know, and then trying to just like lean into the style that I like, you know, and working on, it's like a taste level thing, I think, you know, and then just trying to get better. And so that was also part of the reason I was so active with ODW and some of the other groups I've been in and just trying to get better and get feedback from anyone and everyone and learn from what they're doing. And like the list of things I've subscribed to is so massive. It's like, I need to pare it down, but it's been great for just like getting all these different inputs, sort of immersing myself in it.
My list is so insane. And I also kind of co-host a newsletter mastermind. So like just the amount of people I feel like I need to subscribe to, and I don't want to lose any friends by unsubscribing them.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I feel that pressure.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I, and there's so many that I'm like, oh, I come across and I'm like, oh, I should subscribe to this. And I've been starting to go like, I should probably not. And just like for my own sanity, you know,
right,
and my time, you know?
So there's this, have you seen the movie Adaptation at all?
Oh my God. Yes. So long ago though. I don't remember it that well.
What's funny is when I started reading your writing, so Adaptation, you know, it's played by Nicolas Cage. He plays both twin brothers, and I believe the younger brother, who's a wannabe screenwriter, is taking the classes by this guy named Robert McKee. And Robert McKee is giving this advice out to all of his students saying, you should never narrate and you should never use voiceover. And every time I see this in a movie or a series or writing, like right now there's a TV series on Apple called Physical, and there's a lot of like voiceover and narration about, you know, what she's thinking in between scenes. And you use this technique. I don't think you use it all the time, but it is something that I really love about your writing. It's this inner dialogue that you have. And I was just reading a recent piece and just how you kind of call out like little weird phrases and you wonder where they came from, but you do this sort of in real time in the writing, you know, in the essay itself. And I'm curious, like, is that something, where did that come from? Like, how do you feel comfortable doing that? What kind of feedback have you gotten about using that as a cornerstone to your writing?
Yeah, I think it's funny because I remember talking to Max about that at one point, or he had some feedback on a piece of mine and he was like, usually these things kind of bother me, or like people don't do it well. He's like, but I like what you're doing. So I was like, I'll take that as a compliment. But I think part of it is, so a lot of those, when I'm using that type of thing is when I'm writing in like the first person present tense type of style, where you're sort of like in my head, or like, you know, like you're seeing what I'm seeing and you're thinking what I'm thinking, or, you know, as the reader. And I think it gives it this like urgency or like, and I imagine people could relate, as far as everyone has these inner monologue in their head. I would say most people, I know there are actually people that don't have that at all, which is super weird to me because I have it like constantly talking to me in my head. But, and so I was like, why don't I just put that on the page, you know, and make it, because there's so many things that race through my brain at all times, you know? I mean, even now while we're talking, I'm sure there's stuff going on, right? But especially in more intense moments, you're like trying to figure out what's going on, or at least I am trying to figure out what's going on and how I'm reacting and, you know, trying to keep myself calm or whatever it may be, right? This inner monologue. And so I'm just like extracting that from my brain and putting it on the page. So part of my goal with those type of pieces in general is to just, like I said earlier, just you're as the reader going to live this moment with me, right? And everything that went through my head, how I felt and every little thing I noticed as much as I can, you know? And, you know, not without like overwhelming and getting too crazy into details, but making it compelling. And so that's definitely something that I like doing, but I also have been kind of conscious of trying not to do it too much where it becomes sort of a crutch in my writing. You know, it's like, oh, he's the guy that does that, you know? And then that could like, you know, deter or minimize like the effect of some of the other stuff I'm trying to do, you know? But yeah, it's definitely been interesting and I've gotten some good feedback about it.
Well, for the record, I'm a fan, so keep it cool. Up.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm curious how much of that feedback do you get / listen to into your writing? I would want to think part of wanting to keep writing is actually hearing back from people, resonating with what you're writing. You can only probably go on for so long writing just for yourself without getting much feedback from your audience. And then the second question tied to that is how much your new book is going to resemble what you're currently writing in your newsletter, the style, the kind of topics you're covering.
Yeah. So I think as far as feedback goes, I don't know if I would be writing now if it wasn't for the feedback I've gotten, right? I think I don't have this massive audience. I'm like approaching 500 subscribers, right? Like, which is, it's funny because in some ways, if I was performing in front of 500 people every week, that would be pretty amazing, but it seems small when it comes to like, you know, newsletter subscribers. But at the same time, it's been great as far as just I get a fair amount of engagement.
I was going to say the engagement seems amazing based on just looking at the number of likes you get on your posts.
Yeah, that's been awesome. And I specifically ask people to do that, kind of like, if you like this, let me know. And it's nice because it's not always the same people every week that are liking stuff. There's some people that are like they're there every week. They're like a super fan at this point, which is, that's awesome too. But not only just the likes or the comments, but getting an email back from someone. There was this one experience, one instance that happened in January of this year where a woman reached out to me. Well, no, she actually commented on a piece from like November. It was like 2 months after it came out. And she said she was in the hospital and she had just had her son. And she read it was a piece that I had written about an experience when I was in the hospital with my daughter. And she's like, my son, it sounds like had like, you know, similar birth and all this stuff. And she read a bunch of my pieces. And so I just replied and said, like, here's my email, like no pressure, but you know, I'm here to, you know, answer any questions or chat or whatever. And we've since like stayed in touch, you know, periodically, like every couple months. And, you know, I think I was able to provide some level of comfort for her that like things are going to be hard, but they're going to be okay. And thankfully her son, his situation didn't seem quite as severe as my daughter M's, but you know, even then it's like, I think her reading my experience has helped her. Right. And that's just one person, you know, and there's been a few other instances similar to that, but that one was particularly interesting because she lived in like Vancouver and it's like, I would never have any contact with this person otherwise, you know? So being able to reach someone sort of like across borders and, you know, is pretty special. So those are the things that kept me going early on because it quickly got beyond just my friends and family. I mean, those were the ones that subscribed at first, of course. It's kind of funny, actually, within the first 5 subscribers, my first girlfriend from high school was one of them, which I thought was really funny. But no, so the support's been awesome since then, you know, and then not just from even ODW and those people within those communities, but even beyond that, just total strangers, you know. And what was the second half of that question? You had another question.
I was curious what your book is going to be about. Similar is it going to be to your current writing?
Yeah, so I'm writing a memoir book about this experience with my daughter and her kind of traumatic birth. For anyone who is listening who doesn't know the story, she was born almost a little over 3 years ago and she wasn't breathing at birth and it was, you know, traumatic experience for all of us. And she was in the hospital for about a month, and she had some damage to her brain because there was a lack of blood and oxygen to her brain. So she has cerebral palsy, which is a lifelong disability, and you know, causes motor movement issues. So she has trouble doing things that most people don't even think about doing. And so it's about that experience and just how it changed me and things I've learned and just like dealing with these different things, you know, that come up that were totally unexpected. It was like a different version of like having expectations of what fatherhood would be like for me. Cause I have a stepdaughter who's older, but my daughter M is my first biological daughter or child. And so it's like, you have all these thoughts and expectations of what that's going to look like. And those got changed in an instant. And so just trying to bring people into that world and that experience and how it can change someone.
And one of my favorite, and you know, this must have been so difficult to write, but The Hardest Day of My Life, part one. How many parts are there to that part? Two parts?
Just two parts, yeah.
I think something that you're so good at, Lyle, is just bringing us really closely into this intimate journey of yours and the way that you are able to sort of, you know, recount just the details of everything. It's like it wrecks you, you know, and it pulls you in. Your writing is so clear and dramatic and I never get tired of writing it. Like you do such a great job of sort of holding me through this entire piece. And I find that, you know, in a lot of your writing. And so I definitely recommend checking that specific article out because it's a clear indication of who Lyle is as a person, as a dad, and as a husband. And just, it's such a great piece.
Cool. Thanks for saying that. That's actually how the book is going to begin, at least. Well, and who knows when the editor gets it in their hands, what actually happens. But I took those two pieces and I broke them into like chunks, like scenes, and then interspersed flashbacks in between them. So you're sort of bouncing back and forth. So it's not just all of that, because that's a lot. It's like pretty heavy and action packed, if you will. But that's like obviously like the core moment where everything changed, right? So I'm really like dumping you right into that at the beginning of the book, but then giving you some backfilling, some information about like where I was at, you know, before that, and like the excitement leading into, you know, having a kid and even dealing with like, so she was born in 2018. In June, and in October of 2017, we had like massive fires and had to evacuate our home here in Sonoma. And I had just found out my wife was pregnant a week prior to that, you know. So we have had like a lot of stuff going on in and around her birth and her short, you know, 3 years of life, like, you know, a pandemic for 18 months, for example, you know. So a lot of that's going to be in the book. But yeah, that piece in particular was one of those where I wanted to capture it while it was still somewhat fresh in my mind. And then the other thing that's kind of unique, I think, to me telling the story now is I have all these pictures and things that I took, and they all have timestamps on them. And I can go, oh, that's when this happened, and that's when this happened. And that's really helped me kind of piece together some of those details. In addition to that, I'm kind of thanking my past self. We were in the hospital at one point with my daughter she had a follow-up thing, and she had to stay overnight for this test. And so you're just sitting around, you know, killing time. And we were totally unprepared to go to that hospital visit because it was sort of a surprise thing that the doctor threw on us. So we didn't pack a bag. We had nothing with us, right? I didn't even have like my laptop or anything. So I was just goofing off on my phone. And we had started, the day she was born, I had started a text thread with all the grandparents and stuff. And so I went back to that and I just took a bunch of screenshots of what I said, when I said. And at that point I had no plans to like write a book or anything. But now I'm like patting my old self on the back for capturing all that, because it's been really helpful to kind of piece together all the details, because it's really easy to forget that stuff, you know? And so that's definitely helped as far as like drilling into those little minute details, you know?
So music, I don't know what your standards are for music and for poker, but you're not really doing those things at that level anymore. Do you feel like writing is different to you? Like, do you think this is just, you're going to be doing this forever, whether you find success based on your standards or not? Like, is this sort of like this is me for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I think it is. It feels different in that sense. Well, it feels somewhat similar to music as far as being creative and going, oh, I have this idea and I'm going to try it, you know, but it's much different in the sense that I can just, like, if I have an idea for something to write, I can just pop open a window and start writing. Whereas when I was in the band, it's like, okay, bring this idea to practice. And then, like, maybe they like it, maybe they don't, you know, or it gets totally changed into something I didn't expect, and dealing with different personalities and stuff like that. I always joked when I was in the band that it was like, so we had five guys in the band, and I always joked that it was like having four girlfriends, except you never have sex, right? Because you're just like managing everyone's personalities, and, you know, we had different taste level, you know, like things that we were into or not. Like, one guy in the band was into like super, super heavy metal music. Other, yeah, I was like listening to a lot of Bjork back then, like much different, you know? So yeah, so that was always a challenge. And at poker, I guess in some ways is similar, but it's became more of a, that was easy to become more of a job, because it feel more like a job, because it's just like clocking the hours and making sure you're making good decisions. And, you know, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, but it was, you could get creative, I guess, with it and like work on your game and stuff like that and try to get better. But there were some like basic fundamentals and things like that. And then, you know, if you deviate from those too much, then you're like, that could be a leak in your game that could be exploited and people could take advantage of it and you could win less. So, and honestly, like, poker started to feel a little funny after a while, because it was like, okay, I'm just making money off other people. And especially when I would go in person, you would see the same people over and over, and they're losing every time you're there. And you're like, it just felt weird, you know, after a while. So no, writing's felt a lot different, and being able to do all kinds of different, it's like my, I'm not beholden to anyone. I'm just writing whatever the hell I want every week, you know? And that's been freeing and fun.
Absolutely love that. It does feel free and fun. And I kind of relate that to when I was younger, I wanted to be a photographer and I was shooting weddings, and weddings took a ton of preparation. You had to meet the couple a year in advance and you deal with them 6 months post-event. And I got into web design because it was just so effortless and immediate, you know, I had that quick, I can get on the web and it's done. And writing to me feels in a very similar vein as that. So I can completely relate.
Yeah. I mean, not that there isn't struggle with writing, right? Like, every single, you know, day. Like, it's sometimes really hard to extract crap out of your brain and onto the page and then hope that someone reads it and it gets into their brain and they interpret it in the way you want. It is a really hard process, but when I get something like the piece you mentioned, I'm very proud of that one. I think it's like, it came out really good. And I think, especially since it was like one of my earlier on pieces, I still look back at it and go, I like how I did this. And I haven't changed it a whole lot when I put it into book form, you know? And so that's rewarding, you know, to kind of look back and go, okay, I did something interesting and artistic with that, you know?
Yeah. There's, since that's a pretty nice segue there, I'm curious about, like, how long did it take you to write that piece? And maybe just like, what's your process like when it comes to writing?
How long did it take me? I don't really know, to be honest. I started, so like around this time last year, so like June, July of 2020 is when I just started writing a lot. I was writing something every night and trying to, I typically write in the evenings when my family goes to bed and the house is quiet and there's no like Slack messages coming through really, and for work. So yeah, I started writing a lot and I was writing different things, you know, different stories, just trying to jot down a bunch of ideas. And that one was just like the one that was like, okay, this is sort of like my first like cornerstone piece, if you will, of like, okay, I'm starting to tell this story. Cause there's a bunch of people who knew me, you know, friends and family and stuff, that knew something happened, but they didn't really know what happened, you know? And so I was like, this is my way to really like tell them like exactly what happened. They can like live it with me. Right. And it was my first kind of foray into that style of writing. I read a couple of books that inspired that. One was Dave Eggers' book, A Heartbreaking Work of Staggering Genius, which is a memoir. I would say it was like a memoir-ish book, because I think he fabricated some stuff to make it a better story, but it's written that very like that first person present tense has that like sense of urgency. It's like very real, raw, and it was about kind of a more youthful moment for him, but it was, I really liked that style of it. And then the other one was Love Warrior by Glennon Doyle, who my wife recommended that one. And like, that's a great example. Hers is a great example of like one that she's talking about stuff that I have no experience with. Like she was into like, she was like severe, like alcohol and drug abuse and stuff like that. And she had a kid and, you know, had to kind of change her ways. And she had a falling out with her husband and all this stuff. And I was like, I don't know how, what any of that stuff is like, but I really liked her book and I really liked the style it was written in and that kind of, that same feeling. And so that was my first attempt to kind of emulate that style and make it my own in some ways. But yeah, I would say as far as my writing process generally though, it varies a lot. There's been times where I'm like, okay, I got to ship something tomorrow and it's like 9 p.m. the day before, you know? And then there's other times where it's something I've been working on for a while and it's just taken a while to get out of my head. My latest piece is an advice column piece about kind of, it was written, the question was written by someone who's almost 30 and she's kind of freaking out about, you know, a kind of like lost youth or just like, what do I do as like, now I'm young and people say I have to achieve things. And that one took me a really long time to write, like well over a week, just chipping away at it most nights. But I think it came out good. But then there's other ones where it's just it comes more easily, you know. Ironically, I'm writing one about divorce now because I was divorced at one point and a friend of mine's just started going through a divorce and he had been married for like 20 years. So that one ironically is coming out easy, which you wouldn't think it would, but I think there's been enough time that has passed since I was divorced that it's easier to write about, you know?
Yeah, that's well, first of all, I'm glad that your last column piece did take a while because it looked like it took a while, which was like, damn it, if you came out with that in like a day, you got a long ways to go.
Is that the fear pressure one?
Yeah.
Nice. I'm gonna dive into that. Very intrigued right now. I'm curious about your takes on storytelling and how methodic that's become for you versus like it being so natural and just like just reading that piece that we were referring to, The Hardest Day in My Life. And as you're writing this book, do you follow steps in your head to like tell a story, or is it become more natural over time? And if so, what are those steps?
Yeah, I think I some of it comes naturally. A story like that one, there's just like built-in tension and things like that, you know, because it's literally life or death. So it's easier in that sense. Even though it's hard to write, it's easier to create that tension that makes storytelling, makes for a really good story. Whereas there could be other smaller things. Like I wrote this one piece, I don't know why this one just popped in my head. It was about couches, which is weird, but it was, I just like had this random thought because we had just gotten a new couch. And I was like, I started just like thinking about stories centered around couches. And I realized like, there are a lot of stories that happen in our lives that are around a couch or just spending time with family or whatever, right? And so that one was a lot different, right? So it's like, I had to sort of use some storytelling techniques there, right? So I think tension is a huge component of good storytelling. And there's a great book called Storyworthy by a guy with an unfortunate name. His name is Matthew Dix, but it's really good for people trying to write these type of stories, like first person anecdotes, or even just telling stories to your friends. It could help, right? He tells stories out loud at the Moth, which is, you know, you have to memorize the story and you tell them, I think they're usually like less than 10 minutes long and they do competitions and stuff. And he's won a bunch of them. And some of his stories can be about intense situations that have happened in his life. But when you really like pick apart the story, it's really not about the thing that happened. It's something maybe that happened after, or some realization he came to or something like that. And I think that's a big component of good, great storytelling. He calls it the 5 second moment. Like every story has a 5 second moment. That's what it's really about. You know, like my daughter being born and having this, you know, traumatic experience on that day is not really the story. It's part of the story and it's shaped like, you know, the beginning of the story in some ways. But like really what what I want to dig into is like how it changed me as a person, you know, and my expectations and things like that. So that's one thing. Tension is interesting because there's a bunch of ways you could do it, right? There's some that are obvious, like in her case, like, is she going to live or die, right? When she's born, that's the obvious example. But then there's some other really interesting ones. One I really like that is used all the time in movies, and now you'll see it and go, oh, damn it, they're doing it again, is, I forget what he calls it, but it's like the good example of it's like if you're watching like a heist movie or something, right? Like an Ocean's 11 or something. And they go, okay, here's the plan. And they got this whole thing and they're having this meeting with all these people, you know, all the players, like, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. And the whole time you're watching, you know that it's not going to go to plan, of course, like something's going to go wrong, right? But you still get invested in it. Like, okay, yeah, this is the plan. And then it's, of course, things are going to go wrong, but that creates that tension of like, what is going to go wrong, right? And so I'm doing things like that in the book because it was really how we experienced it, right? So we had this time in the hospital where she had to get an MRI and we were obviously like worried about what was going to be in the MRI. So that builds a little tension there, right? And we're waiting and waiting and waiting. And then the doctor gives us the results and he says, it's all clear. And we're just like blown away. We had no idea. We did not expect that at all. And it was like good news, right? And so then it's like, okay, now it's like our questions change from like, what's wrong and how we're going to fix this to when do we get to go home and kind of start our life with our daughter, right? And so I'm like sort of laying these plans for like how things are going to go. But then the next chapter, things go wrong because that's what really happened. Basically, someone came into we got transferred to a different hospital and someone from the neurology team came up to us and said, so, you know, as you know, there was like an abnormality in the MRI and we're like, what? What are you talking about? You know, and it was like, all of a sudden our world got flipped upside down, you know, but like, that's a storytelling technique too, right? Even though it is actually what happened, to kind of build up tension in different ways. So it's been fun to play around with that stuff. And even like in the book and then also in individual pieces I write where I sort of do those things intentionally.
You just describing the end of that first chapter, it works. Like I'm already interested in like, okay, I want to see how this completely unravels, even though I kind of know. But so before we wrap up, I'm curious if maybe you have a bit of advice for writers and, you know, has it become a habit for you where you're just like, I have to do this every single day now? What is it about this practice? Like, how do you stay consistent? And what would you say to other writers who maybe have trouble writing, you know, and finding that consistent habit?
Yeah, I would say the more you can make it a habit, the better. That's just going to lead to better results or just more consistent writing. And it doesn't have to be like this amazingly polished thing every time you write, you know. I've said this in a number of things and I probably even wrote it at some point, but I heard this interview probably about a year ago now or a little over a year ago it was actually with a guy who's written a few books, but he was talking about someone else that he had heard who had written something crazy, like 80 novels, like a huge number of novels, right? And of course, everyone asked him, you know, how the hell do you do that? And he said, I just write 200 crappy words per day. And the idea being that, so sure, some days maybe that's all you write and you're like, okay, I got 200 words out at least and like, you know, go to the next day because it was a hard day or whatever. But there are other times where you can start to write that amount and then you kind of get some sort of flow going and then you just lean into that and keep going, you know? And so, yeah, I'll have days where I write a couple hundred words. Like last night, I probably wrote like 300 words or something like that. But then there's other times where I go nuts and write a lot more, you know, like 2000 words, you know, it just depends. It depends on just like my energy level and like if I'm inspired by something or, you know, have a bit of like momentum going into it. The other thing that I found kind of interesting is, and this is sort of counterintuitive, but it's been working for me when I remember to do it, is sometimes if I'm in a good flow and I feel like, okay, I've gotten a good amount down and I have an idea of where I want to go next, but maybe I want to think a little bit more about it, I'll just stop and I'll leave a note for myself wherever I'm at in the piece and just sort of go, okay, here's where I want to go next, like a couple bullet points, right? And I just leave it because then the next time I know I'll sit down and I'm like, I know where I can start, you know, go, okay, I'll go right back to there and I'll dig into that more. And meanwhile, I've had almost 24 hours to sort of mull it over in the back of my head. You know, I think I do a lot of writing, just not actually at the keyboard, just thinking about stuff. I imagine you guys could probably relate to that. You know, you just like get hung up on an idea or something or a thought. And then the other thing is just capturing stuff in the moment, right? So just jotting something down when it comes to me. And that could be anything from, this is like a funny line I thought of, or like or a title to a piece, or that can inspire something, or just some observation that happened during the day. All that stuff is just like, you know, I don't know if this is just me being like ageist about myself, but I'm 43 now and it feels like I just don't remember stuff as well. So I like have to jot it down somewhere, you know? So that's been really helpful for me.
Amazing. This was our first time sort of having a conversation, you and I know you and Nate had connected before, but I really appreciated how much of a clear sort of thinker you are, just in the way that you sort of answered all the questions. It probably goes a lot back to your writing a lot as well. So I realized this with myself, as I write things, I'm able to explain them a lot better verbally as well. So I really, really enjoyed this conversation, got a bunch of tips from it as well, and can't wait to share it with everyone. Where can people sort of follow you along on your journey to your publishing and as well as your newsletter?
So the best place is lyle.substack.com. That's my newsletter. It comes out every Saturday at 8:08 a.m. Pacific time, which is sort of a reference to the 808 kick drum in electronic music. I don't know why I did that. I think it's memorable though. So Saturdays, 8:08 a.m. And then otherwise, like I'm my full name, Lyle McKinney, at Lyle McKinney on pretty much all the other social stuff. I'm pretty active on Twitter, which is a mix of, sometimes I'll put the stories that I share in my newsletter into like a longer thread. Other times I'll just do really dumb memes that I think of, or jokes or shit posts, if you will. But yeah, just trying to have more fun with Twitter and interact with friends. And so yeah, come join me.
That's amazing. And it's Lyle, not Kyle.
That is correct. Yeah, that's my name on Twitter, is Lyle, not Kyle McKinney, because I get called Kyle very regularly. You know, Lyle's a very uncommon name. I think the popularity of Lyle peaked in like the 30s at one point, and it really wasn't even that popular then.
Love it. Really appreciate that. Thanks again so much for your time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Lyle, thanks for being on.
Yeah, this was super fun. Thanks, guys.